Okay, let's give this one more shot. We're going to take one more take, Carrie, when you first meet Rollo. Okay, so let's try this again. And action.
Too short for a stormtrooper?
No, I've had about enough of everyone making fun of the actors here, okay? We got to knock this off. We need to be serious. I'm going to tell you something, Miss Fisher. Okay, I know you did this Star Wars movie before, okay? But that was then. I'm going to tell you something. In 20 years from now, nobody's going to know what Star Wars is. Okay, so if you want to continue working in Hollywood, you got to stop treating people like this. All right, let's go. Take it from the top. Hello and welcome to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 10, and this week we're doing Under the Rainbow from 1981, starring Chevy Chase and Princess Leia Organa herself, Carrie Fisher. But before we get into that, let me introduce the host. First, you may know him as Tone 40 in the electronic dance music world, but I know him as the host of Android App Addicts, my buddy Steve Cherubino. What's going on, Steve?
What's up, Sean? I'm doing good. I think I talked about it last week. I've been switching like what I've been eating, and I've been went on like a juice fast for like a couple days, and then just, dude, and I'm starting to eat all this healthy food, and I feel like my body is a car, and I've been putting premium in it for like the premium gas in it for like the last 3 weeks, and I feel great.
Are you still just doing the juice, or you've put in new foods, but better foods than what you were doing?
Yeah, I stopped the strictly juice fast, and I put in like all this, you know, the superfoods. I go online and look up superfoods. I just put them, all those in my diet now too, like goji berries and all this stuff. And I seriously feel like what I said, like I'm putting premium in the tank now, and it's like night and day difference so far. Hopefully it won't be like a crash next week, but like I'm going strong right now, so I'm pretty psyched.
I doubt it, man. That's good. I'm happy for you. I'm glad you've been sticking with it. I know you've been getting razzed about it a little bit on the side from a couple of guys, but I'm glad you've been sticking with it. That's good, man. Get healthy and stay that way.
Thanks, man.
So, also, Dor's not with us this week. He's down in Disney World. So, we got an awesome co-host here, special host. And you might know him from his own podcast, You Don't Know Flack, or from RobOHara.com. We have with us tonight, Rob O'Hara. What's up, Rob?
Hey, everybody. How's it going today?
It's going good. I'm glad you came on. I appreciate it.
Unlike Steve, I've been eating crap all weekend.
It's all right, man. I've been eating it my whole life.
You know, I actually did that juicer thing for a while, and we should have stuck with it, but I couldn't get over that hump. You know, it was like the 2 days of eating liquid kelp. And I was done, man. I just couldn't do it.
What did you do, 2 days?
Yeah. It was like, but everything was kelp. Everything, even like, I can smell it. Like when I mow my lawn, like that wet grass smell. It was like that for 2 days. I just couldn't deal with it, man.
Was it kelp or kale?
It could have been both. Like 50-50.
No, I mean, I threw all kinds of fruits in it and stuff. I made mine taste good.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, as long as you stick with that, good deal.
Thanks.
Yeah, I've been living on potato salad the past 2 days from all the picnics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So today I'm like, man, there's nothing in the fridge but a big tub of potato salad.
Yeah.
So I had potato salad for lunch and potato salad for dinner. I think potato salad for lunch tomorrow at work probably, but that's all right. But Rob, why don't you, if you want, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your podcast?
Well, my podcast is called You Don't Know Flack, and it's basically just like a series of old school stories, things from back in the day, like old technology, old computers, you know, things like that. And then there's been some episodes that really aren't about technology at all. I know you had sent me some feedback about the episode I did about ninjas. And I actually recorded one today that's about MTV. And it's funny that at our age, like I don't think of us as being old. Like, we shouldn't be considered old people that have historical knowledge, but a lot of the people that listen to the podcast are, you know, in their early 20s and stuff. Like, I was talking to a guy, and he said he doesn't remember a time when MTV just showed music videos 24/7. So, you know, so it's like just kind of telling those old stories, like the way things used to be and stuff like that. So,
Yeah, it's a great podcast. You guys got to check it out. And I got to say, the last episode that I listened to about the records being played backwards and all the messages, it's a little freaky. It's freaking me out at work.
So was that Ozzy Osbourne?
It was a bunch of different. I had a guy email me and told me about the phrase that he used was the Satanic Panic. I hadn't heard that phrase, but like in the 80s, you know, of all the. Bob Larson was a big one. There were several evangelist type guys that were coming out about the backwards music, you know, in rock and how, the first one I really remember was the Another One Bites the Dust. And if you played that backward, it's fun to smoke marijuana or something. But so on the podcast, I took all these samples that I could find and reversed them. And of course they all sound like, you know, I mean, they don't really sound like anything. And what's funny is, like one, I remember, they were up in arms about Slayer that had they had reversed the intro to one of their songs and it says "Join Us" over and over, and so they had really focused on that, like Slayer is using backwards messages saying "Join Us." But if you listen to Slayer music forward, I mean, it's so everything that's horrible is in Slayer forward. It's not the backward stuff that's in there, you know. So, but anyway, yeah. So. I remember all those stuff as kids, so it's just been kind of fun to go back and revisit some of those topics.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a good thing. Refreshes my memory on stuff. I mean, I didn't think about ninjas for a while, and the ninja episode was great. It was really, I mean, it had me just rolling at work. I'm laughing, and you know, I work in a factory, and guys are just kind of looking at me like, "What the hell is he laughing at?"
I didn't know ninjas were big back in the 80s. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, so I don't remember ninjas being huge.
Oh, yeah, that was, Enter the Ninja was, that was kind of like the film that kicked it off, and then there was Revenge of the Ninja and Ninja 3, The Domination, but there was that whole little period where, you know, like, you would go to the flea market and see, like, you know, all these ninja posters and ninja weapons, you know, we would all, that's when we all signed up for karate.
A little bit.
Yeah. So, and it just kind of came and went. It was like, I think on the podcast, I said it was this little break, for me between breakdancing and skateboarding. There was like,
that's right. Okay. Like I got it now. I'm there. Nunchucks. That was
absolutely
the main thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely check that out, man. It's a great podcast. I love listening to it every week. So, thanks to Rob, he suggested this movie we're doing tonight, Under the Rainbow. First, he suggested Over the Rainbow, so it was. I told him it was a little too far back for what we're going for, but yeah, Under the Rainbow. And when I looked it up on the IMDb, I said, okay, it kind of looks not so familiar. So then I watched the trailer, and I'm like, okay, I think I saw this movie. It looked familiar, but after watching it, I definitely saw it. Probably once back on HBO or something.
Yeah, I think that's where this is one of those movies that probably wasn't very popular in theaters, but you know, in the early days of HBO where they would just run the same movies over and over, like the pirate movie, and there's certain movies that people remember, and I think that's what it's from. I think that's where I saw it, was HBO back then.
Yeah, how about you, Steve? When you watch it, did it seem familiar or not at all?
No, I never saw this movie.
No.
It might seem like a nightmare the first time you see it.
It's like a whirlwind.
Well, I can definitely say that when I did see it as a kid, I had no idea what was going on. I didn't even make the connection of Carrie Fisher at that point, because I probably did see it at, like, I would say probably like 84 maybe on HBO, even though it's from 81, maybe 83. So you're talking right after Return of the Jedi. So I just didn't really make the connection. I may have seen it before that. I don't know.
This was one of those movies that, as a kid, you didn't need to know what was going on for it to be entertaining as a kid. There was, like,
right,
all kinds of action like that kids would like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But now as an adult watching it, you kind of can pick up on different things that may seem a little funnier than they did. So so let's go ahead and get into this movie. We'll kind of meet the characters to begin with. We have Rollo and... instantly, as he comes to, like, it seems like kind of like a barn, makeshift, like, gathering place, like a bar with a postal service or something inside of it. But when I seen him, he reminded me, do you guys remember Grover Dill, was it Christmas Story?
Yeah.
Scott Farkas's little, what's he call him, his toady?
Yeah.
Because Rollo's got this like leather jacket on, puffy. He's got that little, those little beanie hats or whatever he had on. I'm like, and of course he's a little person. So I don't know. I'm like, wow, that's like Farkas's a little toady that's hanging out there.
But when did this take place? In 38? Is that when it was supposed to take place?
I think it was 38. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't have the notes you could hit me up with, do you, Sean?
I do, and I will do it as we're talking.
Okay.
But yeah, so he goes in this place and he's obviously wants to be an actor, because he's asking the guy at the mail desk for some, if he got any mail or any, notices, I think, or something. He didn't get anything. So he's basically saying, look, I'm going to send myself there, because he's a little person. And there's a lot of little person jokes. I don't know if they would fly so much nowadays. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you know, like, I think, what are they calling them? Like half pint and a couple other things like that. And even, I think several times in the movie, they say midgets. And I don't think people say, I think now it's little person, or that, you know, that they call them dwarfs or whatever. So there are a lot of little comments that have changed over time, sure.
Yeah. So when he goes in there, everyone's kind of gathered around, and the president, Roosevelt, is going to give a speech. They're going to listen to him on the radio. And then it starts breaking up, which the reception seemed pretty good for that time, I guess, mm-hmm. to me. I was like, wow, that's pretty good. And then all of a sudden just kind of goes staticky. And of course, then they kind of, you know, he's going to go do it. And I think that's when they start calling him half pint or something. Everybody's going outside, climbing up the roof. To fix like the antenna wire, which I think was attached to a sign. Mm-hmm. And what did we read the sign in the beginning of the movie, or was it completely down? I can't remember now, because it kind of plays into the end, I think.
I don't remember it in the beginning. It might have been down.
Yeah,
because I know they said something about that the antenna was hooked to it and it all came down or something in a storm, maybe.
Yeah, the part I liked is that, you know, they're all giving this guy a hard time. Like, they're saying, come on, half pint or whatever, but they're going to send the one little person up a ladder up onto the roof. Like, nobody else has volunteered to do this, you know? Like, they just assume he's going to go do that.
And he has
that's not even a job type, like, for a little person. It's not like you have to crawl into like a little spa, a little space. It's definitely a tall job for a tall person.
Yeah, so of course, while he's up there, you know, he slips and there's this big fall and comes crashing down. And that's pretty much the end of the scene, right? I mean, nothing really happens after that. He kind of falls, and then we end up meeting. It kind of cuts to our other character, Otto, who's talking to the Fuhrer, being instructed on, and this part was great. I just loved it, how you have the tall guy, I think Lefty.
Right, and the one thing is he slips when he turns and sees the white bus coming in, and so it's similar to the Wizard of Oz. I didn't make these parallels as like what Steve said. A lot of the things that are in this movie I didn't notice as a kid, but there are a lot of parallels in this movie to the Wizard of Oz. And so like in the Wizard of Oz, at the beginning of the film, you meet a lot of the people that are going to show up later in Oz as different characters. And so in the opening of this movie, a lot of the characters that you're going to find later in the movie are in there. And so the white bus, we're going to see that white bus later on in the film.
Right. Yeah, good point. And then going back to Otto, who is played by Billy Barty. To go back to last week's episode, Burbs episode, where we were kind of saying how Tom Hanks was funny, but his neighbor, and I can't remember his name, was kind of like, kind of stole the show. You remember that, Steve? You know, and I kind of felt like, you know, Billy Barty kind of stole the show from Chevy Chase. I mean, Chevy Chase was funny, but I don't know. For me personally, this guy cracked me up the entire movie. His just the way he would say things, his expressions, you know. And so we get introduced to him, and he's talking to the Fuhrer, and the Fuhrer, Hitler's telling him, like, you have to go to California, you know, Hollywood or whatever, to give these plans for the American defense to this Japanese agent that you're going to meet there. And the way they're going to know each other is because the Japanese agent's going to be in a white suit, right? And he'll know him because of his height. And then that, then we'll have the exchange of the pearls in the river. And then that's kind of like locking, okay, we know we're the two guys that are supposed to meet.
Right, because the odds of finding another Japanese guy in a white suit, that would never happen. Or running right. into another small person at this particular hotel. What are right. the odds? Right. So, and you know, what's funny, one of the things I've started doing as you guys have started your podcast is I have started going back and watching, you know, these same films from the, you know, this era, I would say. And one of the films I just recently watched was Foul Play, which has Chevy Chase and Billy Barty in it. So when I watched this again, I was like, oh, here they are. And I guess that was 1980. This is 81. So
that's right. He was the Bible salesman.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yes. So, but of course, when I saw him immediately, I think of, what was his name? Gosh, Noodles, the cameraman in UHF.
I've never seen all of UHF.
Oh, what?
Before.
The Weird Al movie. And,
yeah.
And so they, he, in UHF, he's the cameraman. So every shot is like up like this because, you know, he like goes on site, you know, with their little reporter. And so he's always pointing up
that's
like that.
Right.
But yeah,
that's a good one for the future, UHF.
Yeah, I'd like to see. I know. I think Door is one of his favorites or something.
Yeah,
he's talked
one.
About it.
Spatula City.
Yeah. If I don't want to take this too far off, but I have UHF was actually filmed in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and on the DVD commentary, Weird Al goes through every location. So he says, like, you know. When they go to Burger World, he says, oh, that was that, you know, and he gives the address. So I've actually driven to Tulsa and gone to every location and taken pictures that compare with the shots that are in the screen. It was about 15 years after the movie was made. So you can see, like, there's one, the apartment he lives in, and in the movie there's these two little tiny sticks, and now they're giant oak trees because it's, you know, so much later.
Huh,
but,
that's awesome.
Yeah, you guys should totally do UHF.
Yeah, we'll put it on the list. It's one of those movies I feel like I should have seen that I didn't. And that I know was on HBO, but I just, I was not a huge Weird Al fan either as a kid.
Rob's leaving.
I'm out. I just left the room.
Yeah, I was a Weird Al fan. Definitely.
Not that I had anything against him. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I remember seeing like Eat It and all the videos and laughing, but.
He just did it so well. He was the he perfected yeah. parody.
Yeah, he did. Those are our two little people characters, main characters that we meet. Now we're going to meet Chevy Chase's character, who is Bruce Thorpe. He's a U.S. Secret Service agent, I believe. And he's being sent to protect the Duke and Duchess. And I don't even remember who they're Duke and Duchess of where they're from, but whoever was guarding them at the point, I think it was like an Englishman or something. He seemed very like quick to just be like, here you go. I'm out of here now. It's on your hands.
That's right. And he handed over the dog.
Yep. Yeah.
Strudel.
Strudel.
Strudel. Strudel number 12. And we meet the Duke, and there's a secret knock, right? This is where we learn a secret knock, which is like just a normal type of knock. It's no big secret thing.
Right.
And as he comes in, the Duke is terrified of being assassinated. He's got his disguise on. And the Duchess is like basically almost like she's practically blind without glasses. And I think the agent before even tells him that. About the
yeah,
Duchess.
It's funny how a lot of this movie, or I mean, right up front, they tell you what's coming. I mean, we just had the scene with Hitler and Otto, and he's like, you're going to go here, you're going to meet this guy, you're going to give this code phrase, you know, so you have that little segment. And then right after that, we have this segment, and the guy, what did you say, he's from Scotland Yard or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he says, you know, he wears disguises, she's blind, you got to take care of the dog, boom. So it's like it sets it up, you know, for what's coming.
Yeah, well, they kind of have to because it gets pretty crazy.
You need cue cards or something or post-it notes to keep track.
Yeah, and there's some point where he hears a sound, the Duke, because he's so paranoid of being assassinated, which there is an assassin, like an Italian assassin that's like actually climbing up the side because they're on a big like cruise liner right now, and they're in their like cabin, And there's like there's an Italian assassin that's trying to climb up through the window to shoot at the Duke. So he does have just cause to be paranoid, but he's like super paranoid. So he hears some noise and he's like, you know, whimpering and crying and falling to the ground, which happens a couple of different times in this in the movie.
Now, did you recognize the Duke and the Duchess? The Duchess I recognized right away. What's her name? Eva something or whatever, but I she was the principal from Greece.
Yes.
So I immediately saw her and her terrible accent in this movie. I looked on IMDb at the Duke, and it looks like he's been in a million things, but I didn't recognize him.
I didn't either. And you know what's funny is the Duchess, at first, I thought she was, what the heck was her? The old lady with four fingers from Cloak and Dagger at first. But I'm like looking at her, and I'm like, I don't know. But I knew she was familiar. Yeah, and I looked it up. Eve Arden, I believe her name is. And she was the principal. Steve, you never saw Grease, I think, right? You said that last week or talking.
I've seen parts of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we'll be doing that one. So you probably, you'll dodge that bullet. But so then after we meet those people, the Duchess and the Duke, we meet Annie, who is Princess Leia Organa. She looks really good in this movie, Carrie Fisher. And she's been told by her boss, who is some sort of, I don't know, was he a director, producer? I don't even know if we find out. Someone big at the movie studios. And I think they're shooting a scene for Gone with the Wind. There's really kind of a cool setup they had, where they had like a mat board and it ends up having a hole in it. They're shooting something at like a big, big home, big estate home, but they're actually just on a stage, and this cutout is positioned just right so that when the camera hits it, it looks like you're looking at an old style home or something. But
it was like special effects before CGI.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty cool. So her boss basically tells her that he wants her to, she's got to be like the special
coordinator, hustler, or something.
Something of that. Basically, right. he's dumping 150 little people, special people, he calls, mm-hmm. On her for the Wizard of Oz, for the parts of the Munchkins. And he also tells her he wants to get a funny dog, which we get a bunch of funny dogs in this movie, so which we're assuming is for Toto. So as they're walking down the yellow brick road down to was it Emerald City, I think it was, right? Towards that, he's then introduced her and says this is gonna be like your helper guy or your assistant Homer, his nephew, who's this big, just giant tall guy. That's just a great contrast to be working with the little people. But he's not smart. He's a total goober, this guy.
But he could have been worse. I thought he was going to be like a huge doofus. He wasn't that bad.
Well, I mean, because I thought he implied like he is just not all there. He's not very bright, but he's made for the movies or something like that. And so I think Homer then, he calls, because the hotel is like across the way, I guess, from the Culver Hotel, correct? I believe. And he calls and he talks to the receptionist, you know, typical, like, you know, way back then, chewing on the gum and just like got her big headphones on. And he books, he tells her he needs 150 rooms. And she's like, no problem. Writes it down on a notepad, you know, not in like a logbook or anything. Writes on a notepad.
I love how she, I love how she did do the confirm. She wrote the word confirmed on a piece of paper and then underlined it.
Yeah. I love this part, man, when the manager walks up to her. And basically says he's got to go to like a convention or something because there's nothing going on at this hotel. That's the other thing. Like this hotel is like huge, but dead at this point. There's like no patrons around or anything. And he invites her to go with him as his guest, quotes, to this convention. As long as like nothing's going on, nothing's planned for the hotel. And of course, you know, she grabs the paper back from him before he can even read it, sticks her gum in it, throws it away.
Right. This is one of those like crazy sitcom moments, you know, like something, you know, kooky has to happen to get the plot moving forward, you know. So, I mean, because in real life, you would think she would just hide that paper. And then when she left, you know, tell everybody on our way out, hey, there's guests coming or something. But of course, it, you know, being it's a movie plot, so there has to be something that does that. And one thing I never could figure out in this movie is how big this hotel is supposed to be, because I mean, so they need 150 rooms, and they make it sound like it's no big deal. And later on, we see, you know, some shortages with rooms, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But I never could figure out like how many floors or how big this place was actually supposed to be.
Yeah, because we see it briefly, I think, from the outside in the beginning.
And I don't think there was 100. It could like technically hold 150 rooms. I think Rob's right. Like, I mean, as far as we didn't see it, but it, just from the look of it, I don't think that they could have had 150 rooms in that building.
Well, there was at least two floors. I don't know, because later in the movie when they're on the balcony, it kind of seems like they're up kind of high.
We're jumping ahead, but at one point the elevator, the guy that's running the elevator says, this elevator is going straight to the top or whatever. So there's got to be more than two, I would think.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But yeah, so she takes off with them, and he leaves his manager's, you know, duties to his nephew Henry, and is basically warned, like, you know, if you screw anything up, you will not get any inheritance and you will get fired. And this guy who is Henry is Adam Arkin. I knew this voice. And Rob, I know Steve, you probably did not listen to this, but did you ever listen to the Star Wars radio dramas?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. He is the voice of Fixer.
Oh, and,
yeah, because I could tell he's got a little bit of a lisp.
Oh, I did not put that together.
So I'm like, I know that's that dude. Yeah. So I had to do some research today, and I'm like, I knew it was him.
Is that all he did? Because I liked this guy.
I saw. You know what else he was in? I think he was in. What was that? The Alaska one, Northern Exposure. I think at some point in the later seasons, he was like this guy that lived out in the wilderness somewhere. It was kind of a nut job, I believe. I didn't really look. I really was just looking for that specific name to make sure that, you know, he was the guy who did the voice of Fixer. So, yeah, because he's kind of, I've seen him a lot over the years. I can't point what I did.
Yeah,
but
me neither.
Kind of a.
He looked a little bit like Robert Downey Jr. Maybe it was just my bad video. He reminded me of that. He reminded me of him for some reason when he was young.
Yeah, he's a little slimy. You'd see like that slimy type character. But
so he's been left in charge. And so the first, and you know, so he wants everything to go smooth. And so the first thing he does is change the name of the hotel for the weekend.
Yeah, that's going to bring in more business.
Right. Right.
More business.
Well,
he said
such a good tagline in his mind that he just had to make it happen.
Right.
Because he's the manager. which he tells everybody, like, he's the manager. He's the one in charge. He's really taking the job serious. So he wants to make his uncle proud, which the other people there that are working, like Tiny, I think his name is, mm-hmm. you know, he's kind of like, oh, man, this ain't good. Tiny, who was another character from another movie, played Big Enos and Smoking the Bandit.
Huh.
And I guess he was one of the writers of this film.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Which I was, there was a two or three. He was a writer, I guess, for a Johnny Carson show for a long time. And so this was his big break. I don't know. Tiny's all over the place with his ideas in this film, but he's one of the writers.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah. So we cut to the train. Now we're gonna get, because we have 150 little people that are booked to come there. We got the Duke that's gonna be coming, because I think Thorpe actually books the whole upstairs ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's on the train, and this is when we find out basically that Strudel, who the Duchess's dog, is there's multiple Strudels, because when they're on the train and the Duke is, you know, paranoid again, the wife leaves after the dog Strudel pees on Chevy Chase's lap, and the Duke has his gun. He's like, because he's still paranoid about, you know, an assassin, and they go through a tunnel or something, and the gun goes off and shoots strudel, I think number 12 at this point, we find out.
And the Duchess, you know, that was the setup before, is that she doesn't wear glasses, so she can't see anything. So it turns out that the strudels are pretty much interchangeable. They just get another one, and she doesn't see.
Yeah, she has no idea.
They're very, very different, like different sizes, colors, and everything.
Yeah, so it's kind of that was pretty funny. And they go into like I think like the luggage car on the train to go, and so I guess he's just has dogs shipped around all over the place or something, or were they just going to look for a dog? I didn't know if he had that one there already.
Impression he stole that dog. What do you think, Rob?
Say that again.
I got the impression they stole the dog that was in that car.
I kind of got that impression, yeah, because he was like, here's strudel number 13. Like, it was just a, you know, just they just found some dog.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. I was like, well, did he have them shipped out? But as we find throughout the movie, they kind of just go on a whim. When it happens, they just go with it and find one.
And no real dogs were harmed in the shooting of this film. So.
Yeah, that we know of.
That's right. It was the 80s.
And when they're cutting through the luggage car, they bump into the mailbag, which, you know, starts moving, freaks out the Duke, but it's actually got Rollo, whatever. He's in the bag because he said he was going to ship himself to Hollywood if they didn't get back to him with the. Didn't he want them to send him like bus fare or something to get there?
Yeah, he says in the beginning. Yeah.
So it's actually him that's in the bag. So now let's cut all the way up. Let's just go right to, like, we're at the hotel room now. Well, just before that, Rollo actually has to
Rollo.
Skip. Rollo. I can't say it, dude. Rollo. I'll be editing that out. I'll just do an edit on the back and just cut it in on everyone. But he runs off the train. He's getting chased, and he ends up getting mixed in with all the little people that Carrie Fisher now has, you know, got. She's got her group going to the hotel. So he kind of mixes in with them. They know something's up. And he ends up kissing one of them because she knows he's being chased. Is that that little person lady? Was she the one from Poltergeist?
I know she's in this movie. I don't know if that... I think that is her in that scene. Yeah, Zelda.
Ah.
Yes.
Yeah, so so they're going to the hotel. Now, they supposedly have 150 rooms booked. That's what they think. So they get to the hotel, and on their way, this is when we have a bus come, a busload of Japanese tourists, which loses a tire, crashes, and these guys get off, and we see the side of the bus. It just says Japs, and then it has in there Japanese Amateur Photo Society. It spells it all out for you.
This is yet another thing that wouldn't fly today.
Right. It's exactly what I thought.
It's a bus of Japs. Great.
Oh, man.
And of course,
they all have white suits on.
Yeah, right. They all have
and
their
cameras,
white suits
right,
on.
Very stereotypical.
Taking pictures of the tire that's on the ground. Like everything they can, they're just snapping pictures at everything. That was pretty funny. They all have the white suits on. So
how do you think that morning started? Like before they got on the bus, they're like, hey, let's all wear our white suits.
Right.
You know, there's just so many crazy things in this movie.
Maybe it was the required uniform for, you know,
to be in the club. Be in the club. You got to have a camera. You got to have a white suit.
Yeah. So that was definitely funny. And you're pointing out something as far as like all the pictures and everything. I mean, I live by the falls. It's like that, man. There's pictures everywhere, every two sides. It's hard to when you go up there, like someone that lives here locally, you tend to know which spots to avoid because just buses just pull up and the tourists are just everywhere snapping pictures all over the place.
You know, so, I've told you, we're going on, my family's going on vacation. We're leaving next week. We're going to Niagara Falls. I'm going to get a white suit.
You should.
I get there, I'll just be.
Are you going to get like an old Kodak camera too?
Right. Well, Sean and I are going to meet up and I'll be like, look for the guy with a white suit with the camera under the falls. And we'll have you'll say the pearl is in the liver. And that's how I'll know it's him.
Yeah.
I think it's going to work. What could go wrong? Yeah. Just like this film, what could go wrong?
Exactly. Nothing could go wrong.
My children are pretty short, so look for short children And a guy in a white suit.
And a guy in a white suit with a camera.
Right.
I'll be able to spot you. So they all kind of, they all move into the hotel, and Otto comes. And this part is so hilarious, man. When he goes into the hotel, and just the look on his face when he sees all these Japanese guys in white suits all over the place. And then he kind of like starts, doesn't he start walking around saying the pearls in the river?
Well, yeah, he like announces it, yeah.
Yeah. And everyone just kind of looks at him for a second.
I think one guy said thank you.
Did he?
I think so.
He does.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
You know what that reminds me of is the old, like, even today, I guess it happens on the internet, but I remember it more from being younger, like, you know, on the BBS days and stuff. And so you would know somebody just from their alias. Like, there was a guy that I knew, and his name was Darkstalker, and I didn't even know what his name was. And so we were going to meet at a bowling alley, and I was like, okay. And then you go there, and then you're like, Darkstalker, you know, like that kind of thing. That's just what it reminded me of, you know. He's like, the pearl is in the liver. Just this, you know, random phrase. And yeah, for a guy to go, thank you. I mean, I'm sure he feels dumb, you know.
Yeah, and then, yeah, because then all the other little people come pouring in behind him, and he just looks so annoyed, you know, with everyone being there. I don't know. He played this part of just like this straight, angry, you know, Gestapo type agent. He was awesome. He was great in this part. But this whole scene just kind of, it's just now it's just kind of people all over the place, and the real agent ends up coming, right? And he comes in, and now it's the same. It's the reverse now. There's all these little people throughout this entire hotel lobby, you know, and so then we run into the issues now where they, you know, Carrie Fisher can't get her rooms because it's been overbooked now with all the Japanese tourists, you know, and the fact that Chevy Chase's character has booked the entire upstairs of the hotel for the safety of the Duke to keep everybody away. So she's kind of, you know, freaking out of where she's going to put these people. She asked Chevy Chase, but he turns her down because the Henry actually says, like, look, you could talk to this guy over here. To no luck with that. So then one of the tourists offers to share the room. And this part was definitely sets up for a little bit further where he offers room. I think he notices that she's got the actual script for the Wizard of Oz or something, right?
Yeah, she says that they're there to do a movie or whatever, and he says, well, it must be very funny based on, you know, all the looks of what's going on there or whatever. And this is one of those things that kind of confused me about the size of the hotel, because the Japanese tourists, they got 20 rooms, and then there aren't enough rooms for the little people, so he says we can share rooms. So, I mean, assuming they double up or whatever, that would be maybe they didn't have all the rooms. I'm focusing on details. I'm doing too much math.
No, that's a good detail. They definitely could have handled it without, you know.
Or they quarter up, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I bet you could get like a 3 or 4 level bunk bed or something, you know, in there.
Yeah. Yeah, because they definitely make some wisecracks about their size and like doubling up, quartering up, and Carrie Fisher kind of puts an end to that. So they get that set up, and he says, you know, he wants to read it, and he will give it back to her, you know, if she'll have dinner with him, and he'll give it back. And so she says, okay. So we cut to the dinner scene that night. Everyone again is in this diner, part of the hotel, having their dinner. And this, I think we see now the assassin gets, we cut to outside, the assassin's getting pulled up in like a pig transport, like a truck with a bunch of pigs in it or something, right? And that was funny.
So, yeah, and this is like, at this point, it's like the perfect storm. It's everybody you've seen in the movie is now in this dining room. You've got the little people, you have Carrie Fisher, the nephew. You have the Duke and the Duchess and Agent Thorpe. I mean, it's like everybody is now in this one place.
Yeah. And the assassin's trying to, figure out his, you know, angle, how he's going to get to the Duke. Now, he didn't have on a disguise in this part, did he?
No.
I don't think he did. Yeah, which is I thought was kind of odd. He's so paranoid all the time, and he hangs out in his room and with disguises on.
Right.
And then he goes to a social mixer.
Yeah.
I think he felt really safe around Thorpe.
Yeah.
So.
And the assassin at one point, you know, he overhears the Duke ordering more wine, and he's trying to, you know, put a little tablet of something into one of the wine glasses. There's, you know, obviously, or, you know, Henry is now playing like a waiter as well as the manager of the hotel. And he's got two glasses of wine. So he kind of trying to finagle to get the pill in there to kill the Duke. What else do we have? It's kind of a big scene. It is a big scene, but I'm trying to think of the order of what happens. There's just a lot. Carrie Fisher.
Right. At that same time is when you have the Japanese tourist returning the script to Carrie Fisher, and he says he read the script or whatever. And then right around this time is when the Duchess loses her earring.
Yeah, the pearl.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so she freaks out, and then the English-speaking tourist, you know, overhears everything, and he looks over because her dog is eating some liver. I don't know exactly what they called it, but it was liver, and he notices it, and that's when he's saying the pearl is in the liver, but Otto, sitting across, hears it as the pearl is in the river. So now he spotted his, you know, Japanese white suit agent that he has to hook up with.
Right. And so, continuing on our string of politically incorrect things in this movie, basically Now we have the major plot point, which is the Japanese guy can't say his R's. And so instead of saying river, he says, or instead of saying the L in liver, he says the riva, like that. So he says the pearl is in the riva, which is the code word for the other guy. And by the way, a side tangent is at work, we have a lot of loud areas, and every now and then, basically what we'll do is we just put on our headphones at work, you know, and so we would send each other instant messages saying, you know, people are being too loud and rude. I'm putting on my headphones. So, but we thought we didn't want to type that because someone else might see it. So we decided we needed a code word. And so I said, we should say the pearl is in the river. So now anytime someone types at work, the pearl is in the river, that means they're putting on their headphones.
That's checking awesome. Out.
And the thing is, it's one of those things that spreads, so a lot of people say it there, but nobody knows where it came from. So, but anyway, so when I watch this movie, that just makes me laugh.
That's awesome.
That is cool.
That's a good code word to use for other things.
It is.
And then you get a nice chuckle when people say it, and they have no idea.
Right, because nobody's seen this movie, so it's not...
So did you explain it to at least one person where it came from?
Yeah, the person I mentioned it to, and I mentioned it to several people, and you kind of assume like those HBO type movies in the early days, like I think I mentioned the pirate movie. I probably saw the pirate movie like 100 times, and then, you know, later on in life you meet people, and if they didn't have HBO, they've never seen it, they've never heard of it. So I think this is one of those types of movies where if you were an early HBO viewer or whatever, then you've seen this movie, you remember it or whatever. And the people that didn't, obviously, I mean, it doesn't have a cult following. I mean, this isn't something that gets shown on late night cable a lot. It just kind of went away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I didn't see it. I've watched movies through the years, and this never popped up on my radar or my recommended lists or anything like that. So it's interesting. Yeah, I can't believe it, because I liked Chevy Chase. So I was kind of surprised. I saw a Chevy Chase movie there was a Chevy Chase movie I didn't see yet.
Yeah, and the thing, I guess maybe an odd thing about this movie is it seems like, and Sean mentioned this earlier, that you have a lot of other people doing comic relief besides Chevy Chase. So it's almost like they were trying to move him. I mean, this would have been right after, I guess, the leaving Saturday Night Live, and maybe trying to move him into more serious type role or a leading man type role. But I don't know that it works.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
He just had a part in the movie. Like, he wasn't anything special.
According to the box office, it did not work.
Oh, man. So, but getting back to the dining room area, So I'm not sure exactly what happens, but Otto does go over and talk to this tourist guy. And he ends up slipping this American defense map inside the script. Mm-hmm. And Carrie Fisher hasn't even come in yet. Correct. So when he walks away, right? He gives him the paper, the map, walks away. Mm-hmm. And as he's walking away or something, I think the real agent kind of, as he's walking by, says the pearl's in the river.
Right. So then we suddenly know that he has given the plans to the wrong person.
Right. And then we look over and Carrie Fisher's over there. So now there's, and she takes the script back, takes off. So now there's this big thing like, oh, they're, you know, spies, mm-hmm. you know? So this innocent thing that's going on with them, now they're bringing them into their espionage. That's sure. that, you know, that they're involved in.
And again, it's one of those, I call them a sitcom moment where, you know, you could say, I mean, either one of those guys could go over to her and say, hey, I accidentally gave this guy a piece of paper and it's ours. And then you get it back and suddenly this movie is 90 minutes shorter.
Right.
But of course, I was thinking that too.
They don't do that. So, you know, then hilarity ensues, as they say.
Yeah. There's quite a few scenes like that throughout this movie. I know there's one coming up a little later that I was like, really? I mean, that's so obvious how you could have avoided the situation. I had said about the assassin, we got to move on from the diner enter, but the assassin did put the poison in one of the glasses of wine, but the Dutch or the Duke doesn't end up drinking it. It ends up getting to another one of the tourists, or actually this tourist mm-hmm. Drinks the wine and ends up dying. And the dog ends up drinking a little bit of the wine as well.
Rest in peace, Strudel 13.
Strudel 13 is now gone.
Any way they could figure out to kill another dog in this movie, they'd do it.
You know what? I didn't watch the end of the credits, but I wonder if they, you know, a lot of times like they'll have a dog and then it'll have like the dog's real name. I wonder if it had like Strudel 12, 13, 14, you know. And then there could have been stunt Strudels. I mean, there's a lot of,
one of them had to jump off a ledge.
Right, absolutely.
And that was funny how they show like Chevy Chase just walking out of there, basically dragging a leash with a dead dog on it.
That is a great scene. I mean, for comedy, you know, where the leash is going and all of a sudden you see it like stretched tight and it goes from walking a dog to obviously just dragging it. You know, that's a good scene.
Yeah. After this, we get out of the diner and Rollo meets Annie because someone has told her about him to get him into the movie because they know he wasn't actually there for the same reason. And that's when they kind of make the call. They got to go and get all the little people over to the studios, get them in makeup and getting ready for some shooting. I don't know if that night or whatever for the morning. But then we have a little conversation between Otto and the agent, and they have this hatred already for each other. Like, but they know they have to get this map away from her, this agent that she is, that they think. And then this is when, like, I think this is pretty much when it really just starts getting packed.
Out of control.
Yeah, just, you know, to where I really need help with this one, guys, because this is when my notes, I'm just like, what is going on here? You know, the munchkins start partying. I swear at some point right after this, you see like a line of munchkins waiting to get into a room that there's obviously, I'm thinking like a hooker or something. And I don't know if you caught that part, but it was like right after this, because one comes out like buttoning his shirt or something.
There are definitely things in this movie that, as an adult, you catch that kids, I don't think, ever caught. There's one, really sexual innuendo, I guess I would say, when a guy's coming out of the elevator that I caught this time. But as a kid, you would never get the reference, you know? So.
Yeah. You know, and I had that on my written notes here that they really portray these little people actors as just out of control partying perverts, because the one grabs the Duchess's breast, like just totally grabs her boob and just looks at her really with this like creepy look, you know, and that was in the lobby, I think, in the beginning.
Right. You know, there were, I've read that there were a lot of parties and stuff in the Wizard of Oz, but I've since read that that was all not true. That was just kind of like legend or whatever. Now, I have heard that it was true in Return of the Jedi, that that there were many late-night Ewok parties.
Yeah.
Really? That's crazy.
But so it's kind of like this movie was written around the legend of all the Munchkin parties, wow. You know, for the Wizard of Oz. And in fact, I did read on IMDb that the hotel, the Culver Hotel in this movie, was the hotel where the little people stayed when they made the Wizard of Oz.
Okay, that makes sense now, because I was wondering why they made them so crazy, because they deliberately made them out of control, boozing, like sex crazy little people.
Right, at one point they kidnapped Tiny. They like tie him up.
Yeah,
tie him up.
A bunch of the women do. Yeah, they were really tearing it up there in the hotel. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was like, man, they were just like grabbing boobs and stuffing money in boobs. And, you know, the one waitress asked, and there was like two brothers. I think one of them might have been in Time Bandits in the diner, where the waitress comes over and says, do you want crushed nuts or something? And the one brother looks at his brother and says, no, don't do it. And he says something about her boobs, and I think she slaps him or something.
Right.
Yeah, he couldn't even get the whole sentence out. Yeah. It would have been pretty vulgar.
I wonder how much of it was like improv then of this stuff.
It does make you wonder if they just turn the cameras on for a week and, you know, put like 10 kegs of beer in the bottom of this hotel and just let them go nuts or something, you know. And actually, I think that scene, Sean, at that dinner table, I have to go back and look, but one of the little people, and I think it's in that scene, is Jack Purvis. And Jack Purvis was like the number two little guy in the Star Wars universe. So Kenny Baker is in this movie.
I didn't see him.
Kenny Baker's in here, who played R2-D2, but Jack Purvis was the head Jawa. He was the head Ugnaught. He was, so anytime that there was like another little person and Kenny Baker was, you know, stuck down in R2-D2.
Yeah, it was baking in the hot Tunisian sun in his clan.
And both of those guys are Time Bandits too. Actually, if you look, like almost all the main little people in this, if you look at their credits, they all say there's Time Bandits, there's Willow. You know, like the two or three movies where, I mean, I guess there's only so many people, you know, you could go to in Hollywood that are in the business, you know, so. I mean, when a scene calls for 150 little people, you're going to get most of them, you know?
Right.
Good point.
So let's move ahead a little bit. Some other things happen, but let's move back to the hotel. After they get another, I think we're on Streusel 14 at this point. And there was an attempt on the Duke's life as they were leaving the hotel, which failed, and he ended up shooting another Japanese tourist. So we're at two.
Is that when he shoots him in the elevator?
No. He's got the manhole cover propped up with like his knife, and they move and he shoots one of the tourists.
And Tiny is putting the bodies in the freezer.
Yeah,
as people are getting killed in the hotel.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's like, what should we do with them? Well, your uncle will figure it out. Like, you didn't do anything wrong. Call the police. I mean, obviously.
And if there's only 20 of them, I mean, now they're down to 18 at least. So you would think at some point, I mean, if somebody's not doing the buddy system right.
Yeah.
People are disappearing and nobody's noticing.
Yeah, exactly.
So we get back to the hotel, and Thorpe is up with the Duke and Duchess, and they're on the balcony to hear some commotion because the agent, the Japanese agent and Otto decide that they're going to go ransack Annie's room, to look for the map. And they're like just tearing it apart. They can hear. So they, you know, of course the Duke, he's convinced it's the assassin or someone that's going to kill him. And so they send Thorpe down to investigate. And when he gets down there, there's nobody there, but it's definitely been, you know, he could tell it's been rummaged through. And Carrie Fisher ends up coming in. Her character, Annie, comes in and she swings at him and we have a little tussle. They end up on the bed. And this was funny. It's like another one of those, like, you know, is that our, you know, something in your pocket? You have to see me type moments.
Right. And I always love it in movies where I'd have to look up. I don't know how tall Carrie Fisher is. I don't think she's very tall. I know that she's always significantly shorter, like in the Star Wars stills, you know, and things. Mm-hmm. But I think Chevy Chase is what, like 6'2" or 6'3"? I mean, he's a tall guy.
Yeah.
So the fact that Carrie Fisher would attack him, I was, you know, that's another one of those movie moments, you know, that's like the chase moments that you guys always talk about, like the distance between people, you know, that are running and chases. I mean, I am not a fighter, but I'm pretty sure I could take Carrie Fisher. I mean, well, Carrie Fisher in 81, and now she's put on a few pounds.
Yeah,
she'll
give you a run for your money now.
Exactly. But yeah, I think I could take her, so.
Yeah, we're going to get to some chase scenes I can't wait to talk about. I love how in this scene they, like, Chevy Chase directed them onto the bed, like a beeline right to the bed. It wasn't like they fought for a while and landed there. It was like, he was like, boom, right on there.
Yeah. I also like, you know, she says, that the room's been ransacked, and he asks her something like, you know, well, do you know, has anything strange happened, or, you know, who would do this or whatever? And I'm thinking, she just met 150 little people that are tearing up the hotel. There's 20 Japanese tourists. There's at least 2 dead people. There's all these, like, anybody could be a suspect at this point. Like, she should have no idea.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, let me ask you guys, like, I don't know. What did you think of Carrie Fisher? Like, I thought she was beautiful in this movie, man. I thought she looked better than as Leia. Or some of the scenes of Leia. I thought she looked really good. That whole 30s era, that, you know, she was looking good. I just had to say that, I guess.
The thing, I mean, I don't know that I thought this at the time, but looking back now at the time frame, this came out in 81. So this would have been after Empire Strikes Back. And most of Empire, I mean, like on Hoth, she's got that full, you know, head to toe white winter jumpsuit on. Later on, she's got that goofy red outfit, you know, in Bespin or whatever. So, you know, in this movie, and in a few minutes, she's going to be locked in a freezer in her underwear. So, yeah. I mean, that's good times when you're, you know, 12 years old watching this on HBO. You see Princess Leia in a freezer in her underwear, you know. But, I mean, since it's 81, 2 years later, we get the Slave Leia bikini, you know, which I think trumps the underwear in the freezer. So it's somewhere in between there, you know, but yeah, it's totally a different look for her, you know, as, you know, when we were kids growing up, just seeing her as Princess Leia. And so seeing her out of that environment was definitely different.
Yeah.
I thought she looked good. I'm not a huge Leia fan, but, I became one after the freezer scene in this movie.
You know what I think?
It turned you. All right.
Well, you know what I think it is too, because of all with everything that's going on now with episode 7, 8, 9, you know, and she's more in the news now. And I've been seeing a lot of like, mock, you know, Star Wars 7 posters, you know, with them now. And so I guess to see her in this movie was, I appreciated it, you know, from what I've been, you know, I'm not trying to be mean to Carrie Fisher, but sure. You know, she's aged and changed a lot. And I don't know, she was beautiful, you know. Anyways, we'll move on from that enough, because we probably will get stuck again on the freezer scene. But she ends up going because she's got a, Henry comes to get her, you know, it's really getting crazy. I mean, as he gets her, he says, I have 150 headaches. They go down into the kitchen area. I mean, there's just little people all over the place banging on stuff.
And he says he's running out of toilet paper, which I didn't understand till about 15 minutes after that scene.
Right.
Yeah, you definitely, I thought the timing on that was, they should have saved that one for later. Because I was the same way. I'm like, why would he even say that? Like, what's, I'm running out of toilet paper. And after she gets, you know, these little people to go back, or they're going to get fired, she hears something. Ends up being Otto, who comes through a window dressed as a character from The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, he's dressed like Rollo. So that's right, why, she originally thinks that it's Rollo.
Yeah, so he comes in and then he wants the map. And this is the part, I think I told you both, you know, last week when we were talking about, when I watched this scene is in part of the trailer, and I'm like, That's the part that I remembered that I knew I had seen this is when he tells her he's going to basically like, he tells you to cut her up or slice her up and he ends up cutting her dress off. And it's, you know, it's not in a creepy way. It's in a funny way. Cause when he puts the knife, the sword into her dress, like you can tell it like pops from the back, you know, he's not even slicing it. It just kind of like pink pops
falls
open.
Off, right.
It was creepy. It was still creepy.
You thought so?
Yeah. I mean, like it was unnecessary. I'd put it that way. Like he wanted to see her. Basically.
But yeah, because he even comments, ooh, nice, or
yeah,
something.
But this is another moment where in my list of people, and like I said, it's not a long list of people I can beat up, but I'm thinking I could beat up a little person. I'm not challenging. I'm not, you know, saying bring it on if you see me or anything, but...
I don't know. I just saw Jackass 3, and I wouldn't want to mess
with
you, man.
Yeah, that's true. He'll come at you, but I don't know. There's a lot of... I don't know. I'm sure it's just a movie. And maybe, you know, it's the sword or two and it's the whole moment, you know. But I just think, I don't know. I'm like, maybe just, I mean, were they in the kitchen still at that point?
Yeah, the back corner of the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, just bonk him with a frying pan or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, Rollo hears, because he's in like a washer machine or something. And he's hiding it with some girl and he hears it. And he goes to... help her. He knows it's Annie. He goes to help her and ends up getting into a scuffle with Otto, which I thought was funny, man. They kind of go through the whole kitchen. You know, he ends up getting, he doesn't have a sword. He's got like a knife sharpener. So if anybody remembers, you know, you see the scenes of like a butcher, like sharpening his knife on this long stick, steel stick or whatever, you know? So at one point when Otto has him cornered and he tells him he's going to cut him up and he's like, I'll cut you up and like this. And he hits like a hanging, like, salami or something and his sword just bounces off of it, doesn't even cut it, and then he starts swinging at Rollo, who has that in his hand, and as he's hitting it, he's sharpening the sword. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was
pretty good.
Yeah.
And then he slices the salami open.
Yeah, then he slices the salami open. And so they have a little battle going on, and the Japanese agent ends up coming in and hitting Rilo mm-hmm. over the head with a pan and knocking him out, which, of course, Otto was pissed because he said he was winning. He didn't need his help. And Carrie Fisher ends up running off and escaping for the moment, and they go to search for her. This is when she gets... You know, like you said, she gets locked into the freezer. And that's when I'm thinking, okay, there's a big window right there, you know. But actually, I thought that a little bit further ahead.
You mean that she could break it?
Yeah, but I guess she couldn't because she had no clothes on. What was she going to break it with at that point?
I don't know. Chevy Chase couldn't break it with his elbow, and he gave it a really good try. I'm being sarcastic because that was a hilarious scene for me. When he tries to break that glass with his elbow, we're going to get up to that.
Yeah, because he ends up coming back and he does the secret knock on the door of the Duke because he comes back with a new strudel, right? And
did we lose the strudel over the balcony already?
Yeah, I skipped that part. I missed that
part.
But
you know what? I only had one thing to add about that because, to recap is that we lose one of the strudels. Because Chevy Chase is bouncing a ball, and he bounces it over the balcony, and then the dog chases it off. And the minute that I saw that this time, the very first thing I thought of is the scene in European Vacation where Chevy Chase does the exact same thing with a dog, except for they throw the beret. He tells Russ he doesn't have to wear the beret anymore or something. And he throws the beret, and the dog jumps off the Eiffel Tower or whatever. So when I saw it this time, I was like, that's the exact same thing. And they're both with Chevy Chase.
Yeah, he must seem familiar.
He must not like dogs because I forgot about that part, but I'm thinking of the original Vacation with the dog tied on the back and a police pull him over. And he's like, poor little guy hung on for, you know, for the first 100 feet or whatever.
Chevy Chase might not be a dog lover.
He's like a closet dog hater. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. That was a good part. It was all slow motion as he went over over the ledge. So as he knocks on the door with a secret code, that's when the assassin is around the corner now, and he kind of's like, "Oh, with a secret, you know, knock." He kind of taps it on himself. But Thorpe ends up leaving. Someone, one of the little people women comes and gets him. He goes down and finds Annie in the freezer, and that was funny because he like opens up the door, good comedy skit, comes in and she's like, whoa, 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 you know, and of course the door is closing behind, and that's when they're both locked in.
Right. Yeah. It reminded me of every time that I've ever locked my keys in my car, you know, where you like start shutting it and then you're like, and you're too afraid to stick your fingers in there, you know, to save it or whatever. But yeah, that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I've done that. You never just go, oh, where are my keys? Oh, they're in a car. You always know.
It's that split second,
that
sure.
feeling. You're like, oh, shoot.
So, Steve, you think Chevy Chase didn't give it a good effort at getting out of the freezer?
No, it was laughable for me. He's like, put his elbow up to, he's like, boom, boom. He's trying to hit the glass, and it was just a small little thud. Very Hollywood style.
Right. What I thought of is at least two or three times in this movie, he's mentioned, they've made references to the fact that he always carries a gun. So I thought, why aren't we shooting out the window, you know?
But, or even the lock, because, you know, they always do that in movies where they shoot the lock and always hit the lock and it always works. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that.
He just wanted to be in there with Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. Because they have like a little moment, don't they, where they're kind of snuggling.
It's so cold, you know. She's in her underwear.
Doesn't he actually pull, because they notice the dead bodies hanging, and doesn't he pull the gun out on what, because they think they're actually people until they realize that they're the dead Japanese.
Absolutely.
Doesn't he pull the gun out on them at that point?
Yeah. Maybe his elbow was too sore from hitting the window before, so now he can't point the gun or something.
Yeah, he couldn't handle the recoil of shooting a gun or something. So, yeah, I was with Steve. I was like, really? Come on, man. The window? What are you doing? But, so
this is when she finally warms up to him here. She didn't like him up to this point.
Literally.
Right?
Yeah, literally and figuratively. She warms up at this point because he's got the got the coat around her, you know?
Yeah. And I think we cut to this is when the assassin gets into the room of the Duke, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's used the secret password. He comes in and he's kind of pushing the cart like he's, you know, room service, and he goes into this whole like monologuing about what his ancestors or his parents and the Duke's father, and there's this whole thing going on. I was just I really wasn't paying much attention to what he was saying. I just thought it was kind of funny, that scene.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I didn't care why he wanted to kill the Duke. Like, that didn't make the movie better for me, his little monologue. Like,
right.
All you need to know is that he's an assassin or whatever, you know. It's not like, you know, he's Inigo Montoya. You know?
Yeah, you kill my father, prepared to die.
Right, you know, I mean, he could have just said, you know, now's your time or whatever. And then and then the Duchess walks out, and then he ends up introducing the Duchess, you know, like, hello, this is the Duchess of, Luchow. This is the Duchess of Luchow. This is the assassin.
Yeah, throws a pillow at him.
Right.
And this is how he's so cowardly, the Duke. Like, he just basically, like, left his wife in very, like, extreme danger at that point, and he just ran for his life. Like, I thought that was kind of funny.
And yeah, we have the chase scene.
Right, very stereotypical slapstick kind of chase scene, because, I mean, the assassin, I mean, let's see, we've seen him... We saw him knocked off of the window of a cruise ship. We've seen him, you know, I mean, he's obviously chased this guy across the country. He's chased him in multiple places, and now he has his opportunity to kill the Duke. And he's like, well, first of all, he gets boarded by a pillow, like you just said, you know, and he's running around or whatever. I mean, you should just shoot him and then, you know, maybe break the fourth wall and give your speech to the camera at that point or something. But yeah, I don't know.
Plus, when the Duke's wife came in, he didn't have to, like, hide his gun. I mean, who cares?
Right, yeah. He wanted to make a good impression before he killed her husband.
Right.
Yeah, he, like, bows to her and everything. You know, how do you do? Or something like that. So, yeah, that was funny. The Duke ends up hiding in a closet. And he's hiding there. And he does find him. Opens up and he, he's not going to shoot him. He has like this whole like scene, slow like stance he's going to do to shoot the Duke.
He's been building this up. I mean, for years, I'm sure he's been following this guy, you know, so now it's like he wants it to be exactly perfect, like he's imagined it or something.
Right. Yeah. And then we cut to that Otto finds Annie and Thorpe in the freezer, gets them out, and he takes them. I think he takes them to a barbershop, right? Like there's a barbershop.
Rollo does, not Otto, right? No, Otto does?
I thought he did because he had...
My bad. I forgot.
I have to remember because he gets Annie because Annie's in there first, and then because Chevy Chase comes in second.
Right.
I don't remember how they got out, to be honest. Sorry, man. You probably got it right.
No, I could be wrong. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Anyways, one of the little people let him out of the freezer, and they end up in the barber shop, which is inside the hotel. It's like built inside, and they take him in there, and they use don't they use strudel as like
bait?
You know, yeah, bait the hostage or something like that to I think get the Duke in. Yeah, I'm kind of there's yeah. so much going on at this point. It was kind of hard to you know. Keep track of what was going on.
Yeah, that's right. They get so you've got the the Duke and Duchess there in the we'll call it, I think it is a little barber shop, that's what it seems like. And you have Otto in there, and you have the bad Japanese agent.
Yep.
And then the assassin runs in there, right?
He comes in a little later.
Okay.
I think yeah, because they want the map, and Otto lets Strudel out of the room. He doesn't need that dog around, so he's gonna let him out. Mm-hmm. And he's very concerned about it, which that part was funny because he lets him out and the Duchess gives him a kick in the ass, and he like turns around and gives her a dirty look and starts to walk past her, and then she like kicks him in the face, like his ass.
Well, he hits her in the knee.
Yeah,
first.
Yeah, it's and like then, a reflex thing.
Yeah, that part. I thought that part was awesome. It was very well played. I laughed my butt off when I saw that
was
part.
A good part.
He's a good actor, man. He definitely was.
He really shows his chops in UHF. I'm just saying. That's got to be on your list.
I can't remember him what he did in UHF, but gotta watch that again.
But as he lets him out, yeah, and the dog will say had like a chain with something on it, like a locket on him, because Chevy Chase says like, oh, the map is, I put it in Strudel's locket or Strudel's locket, and you just let him go. And, you know, so now we have this, we're going to have this mad chase for this dog. Excuse me.
Where does the assassin, is this where the assassin comes out of the closet? Literally, not figuratively.
Because the assassin comes out and he's going to shoot the Duke, but then because we learned earlier that the Japanese agent has a camera that's also a gun, and so when he pulls his gun out, the Duke dodges and they shoot each other.
Yep.
Doesn't he pause for a pic to get his picture taken?
Yeah.
First? That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, a picture.
He's like, oh, grazie, grazie.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny. They both shoot each other.
Yeah.
As Rollo and all the other little people are like going after Otto, who's going after Dog, because he's like, he tried to kill me and we got to get him. And there's like this angry mob of little people chasing Otto around as he's chasing the dog. He doesn't care. He just wants the dog.
Right. And then and one of those things where they set up, I mean, this movie does this where they set up things and then it pays off like an hour later. You know, at the very beginning, Carrie Fisher, they told her that they wanted to get a bunch of different dogs. And so then in this scene, then all the other dogs get released too. So now there are other dogs, right? You know, it was like an hour later it pays off or whatever.
And it's total chaos by this point.
I was just going to say, this is the beginning of like mass chaos, like even worse than the party chaos, because It's just this epic chase scene.
Yeah, this is, well, not only that, like inside the hotel lobby, like this is like, you know, oh, my parents are away. I'm having a party with a couple people and all these people show up and just trash the hot. Like this is when, Steve, the toilet paper's all over the place, you know.
They're swinging from chandeliers. Yeah,
they're swinging from, and Henry is actually stuck sitting on a chandelier because they slipped a board under him and did like a teeter-totter trick on him and flung him over there.
Yeah, there was some movie magic in that scene.
So
and then they crash the elevator. That's where they get in the elevator and they smash the elevator. They just
that was pretty funny.
Yeah, because the elevator operator comes out, the black guy comes out, and he's a little person.
Right,
at this
right.
Point.
He like comes, smushed him or whatever.
All the like concrete dust is.
I was hoping they weren't going to do that. I saw that when they hit the bottom, I'm like, he's going to come out like that.
Yeah, I was the same way. I'm like, oh, he's going to come out little.
When this part of the movie's going on, I mean, this is where, like you said, everything just starts going crazy. And I almost felt like if it had ended before this part, that it almost would have been better, you know, like eventually for Rollo and later on. I don't want to give away the ending yet, but, you know, I mean, you have this mass chaos. It's almost like, you know, they got to the end of shooting or whatever. When I was watching it, you know, now as an adult, and I was just thinking, like, it's almost like they got to the end of shooting and said, well, you know what, we got $2 million left over, let's just throw it, you know. Let's get a stagecoach, let's get animals,
The tone of the movie actually changed here to just like slapstick, like like a zoo, just a crazy zoo. Yeah, so I think you're right, it did make the movie a little different.
Mm-hmm. So this is where Sean, is this where they go off into the movie lot now?
Pretty much, yeah. They chase him all the way across the roadway to the studio, and they end up on the, you know, what was it, Gone with the Wind set.
Yeah, through this whole scene, I kept thinking of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, where at the end, you know, where they're chasing after he gets his bike back, and they're going through the back lot, you know, and so you're going from like movie to movie, like all these different sound stages. But I thought Pee-wee kind of did it better.
This one seemed to I mean, I liked some parts that happened, I'll mention them, but it did seem a little stretched out, this whole part, you know, this chase scene until the end, because we are nearing the end. But they're on the Gone with the Wind set, and you have, you know, a woman in a big, you know, like dress with like, used to have like the wire in this, you know, the wires underneath the dress to puff it out. And of course Otto climbs under there because the dog runs under there, and he's under this lady's dress and ends up getting the locket, right? And we still have chase scene because now he's got to get out of there, and they're running through like a woman's like locker room. This is where we see some naked breasts in this part. And I thought it was funny because like after they all go through, there's like the one little person who's like the tiniest guy on earth. He just kind of like turns around, like everyone runs through, he's the last one, he just kind of, you know, he's like, screw it, turns around, shuts the door, he's like, I'm staying in here with the, you know, with all
and
these
like,
women.
He walks, he's like takes five creepy steps and they're screaming
creepy. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's how they end the scene. It's like rape could have occurred like there, you know. It's like crazy.
I mean, I doubt it, but it's like that's what was in his eyes.
Exactly, that's what I got.
And they were just like, what the hell.
Yeah, it definitely, that scene felt like it was something that was added on to get a PG rating or something, almost, you know.
Right,
because
right.
It doesn't advance the plot, it doesn't do anything for the movie.
Yeah,
and it's like the
all.
One scene where I knew it was coming, so I had my hand on the remote, you know, because my kids were in there, and then I was like, hang on, poof, jump forward, you know, 10 seconds or whatever. But, yeah.
And the boobs, I mean, it was fairly quick, you know, the naked scene. It was really quick because I didn't watch it with my kids, but I thought, well, I probably could have squeaked by that one maybe, or I, you know, I might have been like, oh, hey, what's that over there? Okay. You know, and just that little second of them going, yeah, right, Dad, would have been enough time to cover it. But yeah, so that now we have like our chase scene. So I don't know, Steve, do you want to comment on the chase scene?
Well, the whole time, like Rollo and his gang are chasing Otto. The running, I just love the running. I, you know, I'm always going to critique chase scenes. The running is so slow and fake. That's all I wanted to comment on. It's just like they're just doing one of these, like running with their arms up and yeah. like it's as hard, like making it look like they're running as hard as they can, but you can see on camera they're just almost jogging. I just think it's funny when I watch chase scenes
there,
like that.
Yeah, there was a point, I think it was around the pool, where when Otto came, he turns and shuts the doors by the pool scene and starts running. It almost looked as if they sped it up. You know, like...
Yeah, they did speed up a couple scenes. Definitely.
Yeah, all right. Because it reminded me of like the old The Monkees TV show. Like a lot of times they would do that where the monkeys would be like... They would speed up the film of them running around like somewhere. I was like, wow, that looked just like that. But...
Yeah, I thought all the little people must be in amazing shape because, I mean, it's like a 10-minute chase scene where, you know, I mean, from you go from the hotel down to the street to wherever the studio is to all, I mean, at some point, I mean, you got to give it to Otto, man, for he's just going to keep going. He's not giving up.
And he always got like a killer lead, enough time to do like, you know, check on the dog. And he always had enough time to do something before they caught up to him. Mm-hmm. So he was. Yeah, Otto is the man. He's like, should be like a Olympic athlete.
He's a good guy to pick for a secret agent. You know, they probably have an agent training or something.
And then, yeah, cause, and then he gets into a truck, right? Gets into a truck, starts tearing off, which I was like, all right, how's he just getting in this vehicle and driving? He obviously can't reach anything, but for the, you know, I guess that made it more funny in the movie. Then he's chased. What does he get on? A horse and buggy, right?
Yeah, like a stagecoach, yeah.
Yeah, to chase Otto. And they have like this chase going through like the studio towns and everything. And basically what happens is he's chasing him. Rallo loses control. I think the horse like breaks off, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And he's headed towards like the Emerald City. And Carrie Fisher's like, turn, turn, turn. And, you know, he, there's nothing he can do, and he crashes in to it. And right.
But not before Chevy Chase runs from the side and whisks Carrie Fisher's stunt double safely out of the way.
To safety.
It's like a really bad stunt double moment there.
Yeah. And just before that, Otto almost ran over Chevy Chase's character, Thorpe. Mm-hmm. And I think he even says something like, "You're still alive," or something, when he sees him standing there and chasing the map that's blowing around. So Rallo crashes in, and after the crash scene, we cut to another scene where he's kind of been, he's waking up, like you think he's in a hospital or something, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody's there. Carrie Fisher's character's there. Thorpe is there. The Duke and the Duchess are all there. It's just your total, like you said, Rob, in the beginning, it's your Wizard of Oz moment.
Right. They all, he wakes up and you can see everybody, the assassin is there. So everybody that you've seen throughout the movie, is the nephew that's been running the hotel. Is he there? I know Tiny's there.
Yeah, he's there. The assassin is there, minus the little Italian mustache.
Right. And these people should all feel terrible for sending him up on that ladder. These are all healthy people that could have went and climbed a ladder and fixed that antenna, you know?
Healthy, lazy people.
Exactly, right. In this little shanty town or whatever this is, right.
And then they give him, I think they tell him he had mail or something, but they do end up going out front. And that's when like you said, in the very beginning, we have that white truck that's coming, pulling up, or it's a little bus type thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's when the big nephew, I forget what his name was. That was Carrie Fisher's assistant, gets out with the clipboard, and he basically is like there to pick him up to go take him to Hollywood. We're going to Hollywood. And, they open up the back of the door. There's a bunch of little people in there, and there's Otto minus his little Hitler stash. Introduces himself. I forget who he said he was.
Oh, he's like the agent, right? Yeah. He's his agent.
He's he's like, I'm an actor's actor's agent.
The name's whatever his name is. I can't think what his name is, but yeah.
And so, and then Rallo kind of is like, doesn't he kind of make a comment like, what the heck, or something? Like, it just all seems
so. You
gotta
be kidding me, something like that.
Yeah. Climbs on up, and the bus drives off into the sunset, ending under the rainbow.
What a crazy movie.
And what, you know, I was watching it the other day. my wife's like, I think I saw. I'm like, yeah, I think I saw it too. She's like, yeah, doesn't he? And then it was right when he was climbing up on the roof. She goes, doesn't he fall? And then he wakes up and everything's a dream. And I'm like, I don't know. No, he really falls. I'm like, because I hadn't watched it really, you know, through. Mm-hmm. So then I'm like, oh, well, she did remember it. This one movie, one throwback movie that she remembered more than I didn't. Yeah. She's more of a horror movie fan.
I as like I said, watching it this time around, and I haven't seen this movie in a long time, but I didn't remember the Wizard of Oz parallels that are obviously this movie is framed just like the Wizard of Oz, where you have the beginning and then someone falls asleep and then the whole movie, you know, is a dream, and then the ending, you know, they wake up, but the people that were in the dream, you know, then you see that they were really there. So I didn't remember that at all. Really, I just remembered, to be honest, the hotel scene, the chasing. I remember Carrie Fisher in her underwear. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
And Otto, you know, running around. But I didn't, like I said, I didn't put that together, I guess, as a kid. And kind of like I think Steve said, as a kid, I don't know that it mattered. You know, I mean, there's so much going on. I'm sure my kids don't get that reference now. They don't care. They just thought it was a crazy, you know, wacky action movie.
Yeah.
And with a dream scene, like a dream movie like that, it makes an excuse that you could do anything you want, and it's all a dream, so it didn't really matter. It doesn't have to make sense. You know, it doesn't have to, like, be normal or rational. So that was one thing. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that kind of was strange to me was, this was all Rollo's dream, but he was only like a small part of the movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. I absolutely yeah.
Of his
thing.
Own dream.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when he gets knocked out and it's all about all these other people, you know, it's very right. odd. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I thought the same exact thing as I was rewatching it today. Same thing. Like, he's really not in it that much.
And, no.
But this is his whole story of how he's getting to Hollywood. But all right, I'll go with it.
Right. Because
go ahead, Rob.
Oh, I was just going to say the part, you know, watching it now, that I thought was odd was when Rollo gets knocked out in his own dream. Remember, he gets hit by the Japanese guy.
That's right. So he's, it's like Inception.
Right.
It's Inception.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's unconscious for part of his own dream, you know? So it's, I don't know. Very straight, very layers. You could probably do some strange philosophy on this one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I got to be honest. When I watched the trailer and I was like, I don't have high hopes for this movie. I didn't. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know what Rob said. I think Rob's trying to sabotage the podcast or something. But I really did have fun with the movie. I really, really did. And maybe it was because it all just got wrapped up and it was in a dream and it could, you know, those moments where he couldn't break through the glass and stuff like that. And I do want to check and see if it was Otto or Rollo that got him out of the freezer, because if it was Rollo, it might have been played for that, for him to be in the dream.
I think it was Rollo, because Otto was waiting for them in the barbershop. So it was Rollo, okay. Because remember he kept telling everybody, he was like, this guy Thorpe, he's a G-man. Remember he kept saying that? When yeah. That was a strange.
He's the real deal.
He's the real McCoy. He's a G-man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There was that whole scene where, he gets all the munchkins together, you know, and he says, you know, he's the real McCoy. He's a G-man. And they're like, we don't believe you. And then the other guy's like, it's true. And they give
And then they all believe
right,
him.
And then they're like, all right. And then you see Otto, you know, and they're like, there he is. Let's get him. And that starts the whole thing. But yeah, just so many crazy moments, you know, in this movie that in reality, you know, you do have to. And I guess you could get away with that since it's a dream, you know, so you could say, oh, well, that's what happened in the dream. So you could kind of, you know, get away with stuff that way, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have high hopes for this movie either. But what got me was after, you know, the Hitler scene in the very beginning, where he explains a situation where there's going to be like a Japanese guy in a white suit and he's going to know you for your size. When I finally saw it all start to play out in the hotel where they got 150 little people and 20, you know, Japanese guys in white suits, I'm like, that was pretty cool. And then I got into the movie after that because I thought that was hilarious how they set it all up. Mm-hmm. And then I did enjoy the movie too. I mean, there were some really good lines, a lot of stuff you weren't expecting. And it was just an enjoyable movie.
Yeah. I would definitely, I could say I would watch this again. I would definitely say I'd watch this actually. One again. And I was, you know, not, I wasn't worried, but I really wanted to know what, how you were going to interpret this film. Cause I know when we first talked about it and you were kind of like, I don't know, man, this thing looks like it's going to suck. And
no, I do that all the time to you, Sean, just to like, see,
just to get under my skin.
Yeah.
To get me all worried. Like I don't have enough things to worry about.
I always tell Sean, Rob, I'm like, this movie better not suck. And he's like, you're such a wuss. I'm like, I don't just like do it to just get them all fired up.
I'm like, you don't understand. We're not all supposed to like it, but we all like it.
And it
worked out perfect.
Yeah, I looked on IMDb, you know, like under the trivia section. I always do that when I'm watching movies. And I saw different parts where Chevy Chase and Carrie Fisher have both publicly said that this is the worst movie they were in. Both of them.
Really?
Yeah.
I think they're right.
You think?
But I still like it.
I don't know. Chevy Chase has had a few bad ones. Carrie Fisher, I don't know that she's been in that many.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head, and I'm going, okay, so we got A New Hope, Empire, Jedi, Burbs.
Right. 30 Rock.
What else?
Well, yeah, well, she got into, what was it, like the Postcards from the Edge? Like she was like those kind of movies for a little bit or something. But yeah, I thought, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a flawed but lovable film. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
definitely.
Great way to sum it up.
Definitely.
I mean, it's got issues. There are so many things where that would never happen in real life. You know, and like I said, the phrase I've always used is that sitcom moment where you know, like something goofy happens in the Brady Bunch, like. You know, all of a sudden Peter leaves something in someone else's room. And then in real life, you would go, oh, just go get it. And then that episode's over, but they don't. And it leads to a 30-minute, you know, type thing. And so I kept thinking in this film, you know, there was so many points where you would just go, well, just shoot the glass out. Or when the bad guy comes, shoot him. Or when the assassin, you know, shoot the Duke. And then it would, you know, it would be over. But, you know, but you kind of, you just let the film play out. And like I said, I guess you do get a little bit of, what's the word? Literary license, you know, because it's a dream.
Because
it's a dream.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
But then Rollo finds his dream. He gets to be, he's going to go over the rainbow. And I will tell you something else that I feel completely stupid about. As a kid, I didn't realize that the Under the Rainbow was a Wizard of Oz reference. I didn't even think about that. Where now, you know, when we went to go watch it, I'm like, oh, well, duh, you know. And I think that's why when I had sent you the message on Twitter and I'd said, over the rainbow or something, and I was like, oh, well, yeah, that makes total sense.
I know this whole time you guys are going to think I'm an idiot, but I thought that too, Rob. I had that cognition too as the movie was going on. I'm like, oh, Under the Rainbow, that's the song in The Wizard of Oz. And I'm like, wait a minute, was that Annie or was that The Wizard of Oz? And I couldn't remember where they sang that song. But, it, you know, I definitely should have known that.
You know, it's funny you mention Annie because, and this is just a weird moment I had when watching the film, but this movie starts out with a radio broadcast from Franklin Delano Roosevelt as he's president, you know? And I know so little about history. I'm like really a moron. Like I should know more about American history, but... The first thing that popped into mind is that, well, FDR, he's in Annie. Remember, he comes in at the end, remember, and they're friends with Daddy Warbucks and all that, you know? And, like, he's in the wheelchair. And then I started thinking, I wonder, like, if this takes place at the same time as Annie, you know? And I actually did look it up, because Annie takes place in 1933, because FDR was, like, you know, so it would span both of these movies. So then as he was given his radio broadcast, I went back and I was like, so he's already met Daddy Warbucks. It's like this weird moment where those two things crossed over.
they should have had Little Orphan Annie old time radio show playing and then had him cut in.
You know,
That would have been sweet.
Or she could have shown it. I'm surprised she wasn't in the movie. I mean, they threw everything else in there, you know.
I don't know if I've ever seen that entire movie as well. I do remember seeing
I didn't see the entire movie.
Annie?
A lot of it on HBO, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. See, do either of you have little sisters?
No.
No.
See,
that's
the thing. Because I could do every song in Annie and Grease. But, you know, I had a little sister who would watch these movies. We had a VCR really early on. And so we would, you know, tape movies off HBO or whatever. So, yeah, I I mean, for the next throwback, I could do the movie of Annie.
Well, actually, Rob, we
my performance.
we have about 10 minutes to kill. If you'd like to do on camera, maybe a little Grease Lightning or something. You know, we have some time to kill. I'm sure the listeners would love it.
Thing. I was, you know what? I mean, I think, I mean, the Sandra Dee at the end of Grease where she's in all the leather and all that stuff. Oh. Oh, that's up there with Carrie Fisher in her underwear in a freezer. I mean, when you're a kid, you don't have access to things like we have today, you know? So you gotta pick your mom. I'm sure my VCR was worn out from that freezer scene of Carrie Fisher. Yeah.
Or the shower scene.
Yeah.
We had the Grease album. My mother had it. We had it as kids, and I remember staring at that thing.
Yeah. Did you think Carrie Fisher's underwear was kind of odd in the freezer scene? Like that thing she was wearing, it was almost like a mini skirt.
Oh, it was like long. No, I think that was more like for the time, like long, longer, I forget what it would be called.
It was odd, but I assumed it was just 30s garb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
because if they redid the movie now, it'd be like thong, high thongs. Right.
Well, first of all, it'd be like Megan Fox
on stilettos.
Right. Yeah, she'd still have her high heels on for sure. But yeah, I remember as a kid thinking that was a really risque scene, and then now when I watched it, I was like, well, they really covered up, you know. But it probably could just be maybe time, you know, appropriate or whatever. One thing that bothered me, and I did a little bit of research and not enough. Maybe listeners can look into this some more, but at the very beginning when Chevy Chase, Agent Thorpe, meets Annie, Carrie Fisher, she drops, I guess it's her compact or something, and he picks it up and he says, you dropped your diaphragm.
Yeah.
And so I had to go back and look. I mean, I know that, I mean, at Wikipedia, God bless, it's got an entire page on diaphragms and the history of diaphragms. Yeah. But it seemed like an out of time, I don't know what you call that, you know, like a weird reference for that that time period.
I know, right? In the train station, I was kind of like, what was the point of that?
Yeah, it almost seemed like an ad lib kind of thing. Going Chevy Chase, maybe, or something.
Kind of like going too far. Not that it was bad, but just like trying too hard to do something funny, say something funny, sure, in that scene.
Yeah, and as a kid, you know, I mean, that just goes over your head. I mean, they're not, you know, I don't worry about my kids, you know, knowing or, you know.
I mean, as a kid, I would have been like, a diagram of what? Right. A TIE fighter?
Exactly.
Are those the plans she's trying to get to Obi-Wan Kenobi?
But yeah, I like the movie. Like we said earlier, I think there's a lot of things that a lot of non-PC, you know, terms and moments that, you know, that didn't, they don't even really pay off for a joke, you know, like it's something in like one of the airplane type movies or Naked Gun or something, you know, you could put something risque on the side of a bus if it's a payoff, you know what I mean? But the fact that it said Japs, like, it's not even that funny, you know what I mean? So I mean, if it was a setup for a good joke or something like that, I could see it more. But I don't know, it did seem like there was a lot of stuff like that were just thrown in but weren't didn't lead to a good joke, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. There was a lot of that. And I guess during that time when it was made, I mean, that stuff could just be mildly funny and it wouldn't matter. It'd be still fine to include it in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But there's definitely a lot of things where I watch it and I said, yeah, that wouldn't happen today.
Just the Japs. But I think with that too, I mean, the reference to, you know, Japs, and then they, instead of just calling them Japs, because at that time, you know, that's what people in, you know, in the U.S. would have referred to them as. Mm. And so they could throw that in, but then have a little comedic out of it, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, to spell it out what it actually stands for. You know, so for the time, I guess, time period, it was, I don't want to say appropriate, but you know what I mean?
Sure,
for the
right,
time
right.
that it was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you threw it in a movie now, you'd be like, why would you even reference that? So, yeah, you know, as far as like with my kids, I probably still would watch it with my kids. I don't know if I'd be like, oh yeah, watch this movie while I cut the lawn. It's a real knee slapper.
You think they would like it?
I think they would giggle off of it. Maybe my older boy, my 11-year-old. But I probably would, can maybe, you know, distract him in certain scenes, I guess. I mean, it really wasn't that bad, I don't think. But it's not a babysitter movie. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, there's really not... language isn't really a thing. And like I said, there's a couple of jokes in there.
It's the perverted little people in the movie.
Right. You may have to cut this out. I don't know. But there's the moment where Tiny comes out of the elevator. And I had never caught this line before, but he comes out of the elevator and he says, "That's the first time I ever went up on a girl," which I did. I had never caught that. And of course, you know, like I said, it's a little reference where you can put two and two together, you know, but
he said that.
Yeah. When he comes out of the elevator and all the, it was right after, remember all the girls that had kidnapped him and tied him down. Yeah. When he comes out of the elevator after that, he says that. And,
that is amazing.
I'm sitting in the living room with my kids. Cause what I'm bad about on these movies is I haven't seen a lot of these movies in, you know, 20 years or something. And even some of them that I have seen, I think I remember, like the cable version or the edited for TV version. So in my head, they're not that bad, you know? I think it might've been Smokey and the Bandit 2. That there's some definite language in, and instead of a certain term, he calls the guy a fry and egg roll, and so I remember that, you know. And then when I'm watching it with my kids, I'm like, that's not what he said, apparently.
Yeah, right.
You know. There are, you know, you can infer certain things in a movie like this, and kids don't get it, you know, and the adults might get a little chuckle out of it, you know, like I did this time. So I don't worry about that stuff. Sean said, the nudity in this is so brief and fleeting, you know, that you could kind of, I mean, my wife gives me a hard time about what I let the kids watch already, you know, and she didn't say anything about this one. So I didn't think it was too bad.
Yeah, it was very brief. It was very, I mean,
I actually couldn't believe they put it in. It was so brief.
Yeah, and it really wasn't even needed. I mean, you got the idea they were running through the locker room, but I mean, it was surprising. It was surprising that it was there.
Like, just to have a whole movie with no nudity and then just have like a 1 second, not even scene at the very end was weird.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. I did enjoy it. It was definitely a good movie. I don't know what else.
It was interesting.
What else?
I did enjoy it. I didn't know what to expect, and I didn't expect what that was. I mean, I didn't expect it to be like that, but it was pretty good. I didn't.
Well, I'm glad y'all liked it. I thought I have read that the movie was shown to test audiences and then re-edited to change the tone a little bit. I guess the original script was a little bit darker. It didn't have as much comedy, and I think they went back and put in some of the jokes and tried to make it a little bit more lighthearted, and so I don't know if maybe the overall plot got lost a little bit in that editing or something, you know, and after reading that, I just read that recently, and I thought, well, maybe that's where that end, the stagecoach kind of thing, maybe that got tacked on, because it doesn't really fit with the rest of the movie, you know. But I enjoyed it, you know, and like you said, not a babysitter movie, but one you could throw down. It's hard. I think the plot is too much for kids. And I think the plot was probably too much for me at that point, you know. I think they can enjoy it on a different level. They like the dogs getting killed, unfortunately. They like my children. They like the little people chasing things around and having the parties and stuff. So I think there are parts that they like, you know.
Well, and the dog scenes—I mean, they're all done in a funny way, you know, that make you laugh, you know. So,
you know,
I think that's all right.
When I was a kid, my sister had a cat named Joey, and Joey actually—we lived right next to like a really, not really a highway, but like 50-mile-an-hour road. Like you went through a ditch, and it was literally right there. And Joey got hit by a car, and I remember. My dad came home with another cat, and it was like a pretty young cat. And he goes, we're just going to call this one Joey. So I feel like my dad maybe was influenced by the by the strudels, you know?
Strudel.
Yeah, but this wasn't Joey the second. It was just Joey. It was like not spoken of around the house.
That's
know?
Nice.
But yeah, so I don't know. There's some funny jokes in there, but overall it's a little messy.
Well, I'm
not the cat, the film.
No, I agree.
I'm definitely glad you recommended this one. It's definitely a good pick. Good job, Rob. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks.
I don't have anything else on this one. You guys have anything, Rob?
No, I think we covered it. It's like I said, it's one of those that and I don't know where you guys saw it, but the whole film is on YouTube. And I actually I have this on DVD, and the version I have on DVD is much worse than the version that's on YouTube.
Really?
Yeah, actually, the version I own on DVD is full screen, and it's one of those early DVDs that almost looks like a VHS transfer, and mm-hmm. the one that's on YouTube is in widescreen and looks terrific, you know, so I may need to...
Wow, I should have watched the YouTube
one. I don't know how many versions of a movie you need to own of Under the Rainbow, but if I ran across a cheap copy of the DVD, that version, the widescreen version, I would definitely pick it up. Maybe there's some funny commentary track from Rollo and Otto as they
yeah, right.
I would watch that
commentary.
What about you, Steve? You got anything else on this one? Or
no, we covered it.
Yeah,
we covered pretty much everything about it, and yeah, I like in summary, I didn't know what to expect. What I did get, I was unexpected, but I enjoyed it because it was just too crazy.
Yeah, same for me. I enjoyed it. It was definitely a good pick. I'm glad you recommended it. I'm glad you came on and sat in with us, Rob. That was awesome.
Yeah, Rob, that's definitely
awesome.
Hey,
thanks for having me. If Dore ever takes another vacation, you give me a call.
Well, we might have him take a permanent one.
Oh, man. He's going to listen to this,
right,
too.
And then all of a sudden, they'll find me locked in a freezer somewhere. My wife will be in her underwear, and he'll be Dore, he'll have a sword, you know. He'll
and then you'll wake up.
Exactly. I'll wake up, and Dore will be there, and everybody will be there. And I'll ride off in a bus to be in
Hollywood.
Films, exactly.
Oh man, that's funny, Dore. We love you. I'm just kidding, man. He'll be on his flight home this weekend. Be like, what the heck? What'd I do?
We'll get a Voxer from him.
Yeah.
You bastards.
Yeah. So, and speaking of Dore, he should be back for next week's episode. And I know I said we were doing Adventures in Babysitting last week. I tried to tweet it out and post on Google+ that there was a change. It was my fault. I forgot that Dore wouldn't be here, so I apologize for that. I'm pretty sure people didn't run out and watch Adventures in Babysitting, but if you did, we are going to do it. I don't want to etch it in stone and say it's definitely next week because I don't know when exactly Dore's coming back. So I will, if you follow us at Throwback Review on Twitter, I'll be posting definitely this week what the upcoming show will be. But there's a good chance it'll be Adventures in Babysitting. I'd like to say thanks to Pixel 8 for the intro and closing music. You can find more of his stuff at soundcloud.com/retropeachy. He's got some awesome 8-bit tunes up there. Mm-hmm. We are on Stitcher Radio. I forgot to say that last week. So if you're in your car and you have Stitcher or something, you can stream the show that way. And let's see what else we got. Oh, and iTunes. Still waiting for a comment. If you got a good comment, we appreciate it. That on iTunes. So, Rob, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it. Anything you want to say to the people? Last words?
Nah, I think I'm all good. Just thanks for having me. And like I said, yeah, there's as a friend of mine, Rollo, once said, "No dream is too big, and no dreamer too small."
Nicely put.
Thank you.
Profound.
How about you, Steve? What do you want to say?
Good show. Thanks everybody for coming out and watching. And we're not coming out. We're not doing this live. But if you want to find out more about me, just go to stevecherubino.com.
Yes, go check out Steve's stuff. He's got awesome stuff himself. And check out You Don't Know Flack Awesome podcast. Anything for me, just go to throwbackreviews.com. You can find my info there on the host link. And also, I started another podcast myself. It's just really just kind of a fun thing. It's called OTR Playlist, where I just kind of get some old-time radio shows. Maybe Little Orphan Annie will be on there soon. And I put it in a playlist form and put it out there for anybody to listen to. So you can check that out. That's also linked at throwbackreviews.com at other shows and Android App Addicts. Steve Dorr and I, and Eric, who's on a little hiatus, but he'll be back. That's our other podcast, so check that out. There's a link at throwbackreviews.com as well. So that is episode 10. We hit a milestone. So
well done.
Yeah, I'm happy. Very happy. So thanks again, Rob, for coming on. And till next time, thanks for listening.